everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Message Podcast of Friends Church. My name is Gregory, and I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really do hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say a quick thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things that we're able to do is because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to the website, friendschurch.ca, and click the Donate tab. Or better yet, download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy this week's message.
Great work, you guys. And I just want to give a big shout out to the tech team. These guys and girls have been building this system. We're saying it's kind of like they're trying to fly an airplane and then build the airplane at the same time. So today they pulled it out with 4 minutes to spare. So send out a comment, give them a big shout out, say, hey, thanks for all your hard work. They are sweating it over here. So yeah, the band was killing it today too. Thanks, you guys. That was fantastic. So I want to start my little bit with asking you a question that says, what does spiritual adulting look like? You ever thought about it? Or maybe we'd use the word spiritual maturity or spiritual growth. Have you ever sat down and just defined that? Chances are you probably haven't. But actually, I think you might have. You see, probably about once every month or so, I'm at a party or I meet some new friends or friends of friends, and we're out hanging out, and then somebody inevitably says, oh, Vince is a pastor. And I get this really like awkward expression from this new person, like, you're the enemy and I don't like you. But usually I drop a few F-bombs in the conversation just to soften things up a little bit. And then some point later on in the evening, you know, we're sitting down around the fire or kind of in a quiet corner, and they usually, the conversation goes something like this. They sit down with me and they say something along the lines of, I grew up with spirituality, I grew up with religion, my grandma took me to church, my parents are super religious, but I let it all go. And now, I'm an atheist. And they always have this kind of look at me like, I'm an atheist. Like, what are you going to do about it, Clausen? And the thing is, they're actually answering the question that I started with. What is spiritual adulting? What is spiritual maturity? They're saying, I want nothing to do with that anymore. I've got out of the game. I'm not even playing the same game anymore. In their minds, what they grew up with was spiritual maturity. What they're doing is some form of like getting out of the game altogether. And there's always this kind of hurt, aggressive, you know, as they say, I'm an atheist, it's kind of like this, they're just challenging me to say anything like, screw you, Klaus, and I'm going to take you apart. And usually I say some form of this, congratulations, I am so excited for you. Only you should kind of have this stunned look in their face like, wait, are you punking me? Like, what are you doing right now? And I say, maybe your full embracing of your doubts is spiritual growth, is spiritual adulting. You see, I think we have this idea in our heads that holding on to a faith that we see in church, a faith that we see in our families, a faith that we see in people around us, holding on to that faith without any doubts, that's the pinnacle of spiritual maturity. But what if that's not? What if your doubts and your expressions of difference and looking at different ways of doing your spirituality, what if that is spiritual maturity? So if you've ever sat around and thought to yourself, man, I am screwing this thing up, or I wish I had faith like so-and-so, or you know, they're telling me I'm doing it all wrong and that I don't understand what's going on here, and if I held on to my faith, everything would be all right. If you've been in there, if you've had that conversation with someone, and I've had a million of them, I want to invite you to this next series. Because it's going to take that idea and flip it totally on its head. and challenge you to see spirituality and your spiritual growth in a completely new light, a light that will challenge you, a light that will force you to grow deeper than you've ever been and give you more purpose than blind faith could ever do. So starting next week, come back on the stream and check it out. It's called Spiritual Adulting. If you have any questions, Vince at Friend Church, Jeff at Friend Church, we'll see you there. Take it away, Vince.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Friends Church Live, the online version. I like checking in on the app. I like to see who's at church with me. So whether it's Facebook Live or it's YouTube Live, say hi. I know that some of you, like Jody Hartung, you're watching from Saskatchewan right now. Hi, Jody. Miss you. Love you. Listen, my name is Vince. Welcome to the spiritual gym today. And if you've never heard that term, spiritual gym, think of it like this. We come here Sundays, whether it's in person like 2 months ago or now, and a really thoughtfully crafted message from Vince or Jeff or will be created. And weeks in advance, months in advance sometimes. Also that us, as we listen, we can wrestle with that message. And the beautiful thing about Friends Church is there is no one way. There's just a way. And so how you wrestle with your own spiritual journey, this is a really safe place to do that. And that's why we call it the spiritual gym. Vince or Jeff will give a message that will really push the boundaries of your thoughts and ideas and what faith means to you and what it could mean. And there, like I said, there is no one way, but it is an incredibly safe way to explore that. So just like a spiritual gym, there's the physical gym where we go and we work out. And I go to Anytime Fitness. And I go in there and I don't wrestle anybody in the gym. I'm there to challenge my level of fitness. And when I go to the gym, I pay $55 a month. And here at Friends, if this was in real life event, we would have this black box at the front of the church and people would make their contributions for that Sunday or for that month or whatever. Because we're live, that box is removed from our program. That box represents about $600 a week, $2,400 a month, and you do the math on that. That income for Friends Church, we're self-funded, just like Anytime Fitness, just like the gym I work out at, is completely self-funded. That black box, that revenue is completely absent from our income stream. And that's what participates in making this all that this is, our AV team, our music, our pastor, our leadership, all these different things comes from that. So when we go to a gym, one thing that we can do, if we're not a full-on member, we can do a drop-in fee. And a drop-in fee at my gym doesn't exist because that's the way Anytime Fitness is built. But let's say you go to Gold's Gym or you go to Good Life Fitness. There's a drop-in fee. It's probably about $20. The beautiful thing is you can pay whatever you want here for a drop-in fee. You can pay whatever you want as a pre-authorized giver. And by the way, thank you for being a pre-authorized giver. You can pay whatever you want. But the challenge with my gym is if you don't have $55 a month, you can't go to that gym. If you only have $54, you can't go. You have to have $55. And if you don't have $20, you can't do the drop-in. You have to have $20. You can't have $19. So whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. The reality here at Friends is it can be anything. And that black box is a contributor to the health and welfare of our community so that we can make our community stronger in faith. And that's what we're asking for you to do, is find a way, just a little bit of this or that, and contribute to, if this is meaningful to you, if this is allowing you to stretch your faith and make it stronger, then please, we would ask you to join us in contributing to our cause. Thank you. We love you. Don't forget to check in wherever you are. We'd love to find out how far this message is going. Have a great day.
Thank you, Vince. Good morning, everyone. Glad you are tuning in. We did have some multimedia challenges, and the tech team salvaged the live stream, but you won't see any of my notes kind of popping up while I'm talking this morning. Just want to kind of warn you in advance. If you're wanting to be able to support Friends Church, you can go to our app, Friends Church Calgary. You can search it up in your app store if you don't have it, and you can contribute online. That has gone a long way in helping us cover the black box deficiencies. Anyways, really happy to be here. Gorgeous day outside. Hopefully you are maybe sitting out on your deck with your laptop in front of you or your phone listening along. Just in the last month, I introduced my son
sons to a movie that is one of my all-time favorite holiday movies. I watched it when I was a kid, laughed hysterically at it. When I mentioned the name of it, they were like, what? What movie is that? I said, you haven't seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Are you kidding me? John Candy, Steve Martin, no? They're like, no, never seen it. I said, oh, you're sitting down right now. We are watching this great movie. It's so hilarious. Steve Martin, he plays this high-strung marketing executive, and he just wants to get home for Thanksgiving. He's been on a big, long business trip, but life is conspiring, and every time he turns around, he can't get home. He ends up serendipitously partnered with John Candy, this big kind of oof of a guy, you know, happy-go-lucky, but he's this showering salesman and, you know, well-meaning guy, but so annoying. And you couldn't pick two different characters teaming up. And over the course of this week and trip to get home, everything that's possibly going wrong is going wrong. And John Candy is getting on every nerve of Steve Martin's. And you can just see toward the end of the movie, Steve Martin's misery is so palpable. He is like on the verge. Finally, he gets to this counter of this car rental agency after the final thing goes wrong. He can't get a gun. He snaps. He drops like 14 F-bombs in a matter of like 25 seconds. I remember watching that scene when I was like 18 with a bunch of my buddies. And it was so hilarious. I don't know why I love this movie so much, except maybe I can relate a bit to the misery you feel when it feels like life just doesn't quite go the way you had planned. And it's like all this horsepower, all this energy, all these expectations get loaded up, and life is going to go like this. And then it's like life says, no, we're going over this way. And then again, and then again, the internal misery that I have felt as life just keeps doing this. I read a post this week on Facebook. It was a woman I've never met. She said, I want to journal what is going on right now in our world so that one day when I look back, I will once again be able to appreciate all the insanity of this moment. I want to read this. This is long, but I think this is a healthy journey, because chances are there are parts of what I'm about to read that you're going to identify some of those moments where life is taking a turn. She said, today is Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. We're 45 days officially into our social isolation. The Canadian dollar is about 72 cents US. Schools have been closed since early March, and teachers are teaching remotely online. This will continue likely for the rest of the year. There are lines, tapes, inside stores to keep people 6 feet apart. Most shops are requesting only one shopper per family household. Bars and restaurants are only for home delivery and pickup. Parks, beaches, walk-in places are not accessible to the public. All sports competitions have been canceled. All festivals and entertainment events have been banned. There will be no stampede, no Calgary Stampede this year for the first time in a century. Weddings, family celebrations, birthdays, they've all been canceled. Funerals limited to immediate cohabitants. People can only do drive-by parades to celebrate birthdays. Young kids can't understand why they can only see their grandparents or other extended family and friends on a screen or through a window. Hugs and kisses are rarely given. Places of worship are closed or online. Shortage of masks and gloves in hospitals. There are fewer ventilators than there should be. People are wearing masks. Some places even require that you wear them in order to enter. People are even making their own for sale or for donation to medical facilities. Hand sanitizer, antibacterial wipes, anything Lysol or Clorox is in short supply and limited per person. Almost all countries have closed their borders. Fines are being issued to people not following social distancing protocols. Fines of $1,200 to $2,000. No one is traveling for leisure. Airports are empty. Tourism has the worst crisis in history. Any of that have pinched you over the last 45 days? Any of that derailed some of your best plans? Life has left many of us feeling like Steve Martin, just trying to get home for Thanksgiving. And every time we turn around, I'm standing in some Home Depot line outside, thinking, so much for my 15-minute trip to the hardware store. Let's be honest, though. It don't take a pandemic to feel life conspiring, does it? Someone close to you all of a sudden starts developing some kind of emotional issue. Maybe your kids start struggling, can't sleep. Maybe they're not eating properly. Or they're having problems with school. Someone in the family begins a new relationship that you're not approving of. Maybe it's something financially that's cropped up. Car starts acting up. Animal has to get taken to the vet. It's like one bill after the next that you're not expecting. You drive up to that grocery store and all of a sudden you realize, holy smokes, settle in. This is going to be a long day. Within milliseconds, this voice inside you, it starts getting twisted. Louder and louder, it starts speaking in our heads. You've got to be kidding me. No, this can't be happening. For frick's sake, throw me a bone here, all right? I just need this. This is ridiculous. The voice just getting wound up in our heads. Very quickly, we descend into internal misery. Have you felt the voice? Have you heard your voice talking lately? What kind of things is it saying? What kind of things is it just bothered by? I was standing in a Costco line the other day. And while I'm bothered, it was cool out. I'm watching some people who seem to be having the time of their lives. They're laughing. They're joking with, you know, we're all standing so far apart, but this one guy, he's telling stories to people he doesn't even know. He's just having a good time. It's like he could be out there all day for all I know. Have you ever noticed some people that seem impervious to some of these problems that we're experiencing? How is it that some people seem to have the ability to face all kinds of disruption, canceled plans, unwanted change, and still experience a level of calm, peace, laughter, joy? How is it that some people do that in the middle of times like we're experiencing? That's what I want to talk about this morning. There is a kid, actually, in the Bible who embodied exactly that. This guy seemed to have developed something to be able to be impervious to life conspiring. His name was Joseph. He was the 11th of 12 sons to a wealthy nomad named Jacob. Joseph at the time was the youngest son. He's 17 years old when the story the spotlight focuses on him. And it's obvious at this point that his dad has a soft spot for him. Amongst all the other brothers, his dad is looking at Joseph and saying, man, I hate to say this, but man, you are pretty special. You get some of this nice coat. And Joseph hasn't asked for the special treatment, but he's getting it. And then one night he has this dream, after it's all said and done, he wakes up in the morning, he goes, wait a second, was this some kind of foreshadowing of what lies ahead in my life? The dream, it seems, as he kind of thought about it, would leave him one day in this place of influence and power and fame. Stupidly, this 17-year-old kid tells the dream to his already annoyed brothers, who don't really like him at all. And they say, you know what? I've had enough of this kid. And they begin, 10 of them, conspiring to do something to their brother, to Joseph. They were going to kill him, but then they decided, nah, you can't kill your brother. So they sold him to some slave traders. They thought, well, that's a little bit better than killing him. And they told their dad that he got killed by a wild animal. And so at 17, Joseph gets sold and carried away to Egypt, where he would begin a new life apart from the love of his father, from everything he had known. Can you imagine being sold as a slave, not having even done anything, like anything really wrong? You just happen to be loved by your dad, and boom, now you're in some foreign country just trying to survive. But somehow Joseph just kind of digs deep, and starts working for his new master. One thing leads to another, and he ends up working for a pretty wealthy Egyptian named Potiphar. Very quickly, the story tells us, he just wins the approval, the trust of Potiphar, and Potiphar just keeps giving him more and more responsibilities. And hey, you know what, Joseph, you're really good at that. I tell you what, would you mind doing this too? Joseph says, okay, sure, I'll do that too. Before long, he's literally running the household of this very affluent, very powerful man named Potiphar. He had a really bad chapter there, but man, things have turned around for Joseph. Joseph's like, yeah, things are going good. And then one day Potiphar's wife comes in and starts putting the moves on him. She's noticed this guy. Joseph doesn't know what to do with this. She's making all these sexual advances. He says, whoa, no, hands off, we can't be doing that, no. And he keeps eluding her. But one day, she is determined. She literally traps him. She grabs onto him and she's like, it's you and me, baby. And he escapes. But not without her grabbing onto his jacket. The short of the story really is that she, out of anger that he would not make love to her, she turns on him and has him thrown into prison. She goes to Potiphar and says, he raped me. Potiphar freaks out, says, Joseph, your days are done. Joseph's done nothing. He, in fact, all he's done is what is the most honorable thing he could think of doing. But don't matter. Another turn at life, whack, and he finds himself down in some prison in a foreign country. I don't know, maybe he's 18, 19, 20, I don't, somewhere in there. So now he's sitting in prison. You would think the voice in his head would just be freaking out, wouldn't you? Like, what would you be thinking? You've done nothing wrong, and you find yourself jailed unjustly. He had every reason to be twisted up, but the story tells us that instead, he just started kind of making the best of it, hanging out. Before long, the warden of the prison starts saying, man, this guy, he's something else. You know what? I kind of trust this guy. Hey, Joseph, you know what? Would you mind helping me? We need these cells cleaned. And, you know, over here, would you mind just watching them? Before long, Joseph has worked himself up in the prison to being one of the right-hand men of the wardens in prison. So while he's down there, two of the kings, of Pharaoh's servants, kind of his assistants, they get put in prison. We don't know all the story, but they get thrown into prison. Joseph knows his way around. He starts talking up with them. You would think Joseph at this point would be bitter. He's just looking at him going, hey guys, what's going on? They begin telling him the story. He says, hey, you know what? I think I can help you. Without getting into all the details, Joseph helps them. In fact, he gets them sprung out of prison. While he's still locked up unjustly, he's getting these two king's servants unlocked. So they're getting ready to leave, and he goes, hey, guys, hey, would you mind? I know you're going to go back up. You're going to see the Pharaoh. You're in a good place. Could you just throw a word out there for me? You know, kind of get me out of here? And they look at me and say, of course, Joseph, we would love, of course we will. We'll get you out right away. So Joseph's like, whew, good. So meanwhile, he goes back to cleaning cells, but days go by. And then weeks go by. And then months go by. The story tells us that those guys that told him, yeah, we'll get you out of here, they forgot all about him. We don't even know how long it was in between that point and the point when Joseph finally got out of prison, but we know this. Joseph was in prison unjustly for between, they say, estimates are 10 to 13 years. By every imaginable measurement, Joseph's plans in his life have been completely derailed. Wasted unjustly. He's now 30 years old. His tired 20s have been thrown away. And it's not like he's done anything to deserve it. What's really interesting to me is throughout the entire storyline, we never hear any complaint, any misgivings of Joseph, not toward the system, not toward his former boss, not toward the woman who had him locked up, not toward his brothers who had him sold into slavery. He hasn't looked at his dad and said, Dad, I can't believe you haven't chased me. He hasn't looked even toward heaven and said, God, why would you do this? You know, in my lifetime, I have witnessed some personal Josephs. People who have defied, in my mind, all logic. Because they too have had their life in different ways derailed. Thinking about one businessman, he had such a great business going. And a number of situations developed out of his control in very short order. And before long, what was this incredible, thriving business ended up in complete shambles. He went from this executive lifestyle down to working two jobs. But his composure and his attitude was just, he was just not resentful, not bitter. I know another family whose kid was healthy and then one day very sick. And it changed the whole course of their whole lives. You would think it would twist them up so badly, but you see them now, the joy, the calm. Do you know any Josephs in your life? Have you met family situations like this where it's just like, how did they do that? I don't know about you, but I want that. I want to be able to live in a way that rides above life's tough turns and conspiring against me. I want to learn to thrive in the face of unwanted change. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking a lot about the skills that can be developed, some of the work that can be done to cultivate a way of being in this world that rises above pandemic-like life. And this morning, I want to throw you out two more bones for you to think deeply about. I want to talk about two skills as we close up this apocalypse series. One is foundational to the spiritual journey. And I think a lot of you have heard this. And in fact, I think a lot of you technically know what I'll say, but very few actually experience it. That's the first one. The second one's ninja level. The second one is for those that want to take it to a whole nother level. It's the stuff that the Josephs of the world got in spades. They figured it out. Two skills. Let's just start quickly with the first one. These both fall under one category, what they call psychological flexibility. Stephen Hayes, well-respected author, he's done some TED Talks. You can Google him. He talks about this skill set, this competency of psychological flexibility. He says it's one of the number one predictors of human thriving in the middle of unwanted change. These two skills fall within this domain. The first skill set is that of being able to notice your thoughts. Just noticing them. I was talking with my dad the other day on the phone. He was sad. I could tell he was sad. We began digging into all that's going on in his life. He said, "Jeff, I haven't met with my group since about early February." He's been meeting with a group of guys every week for the last 25 years. This group of guys are tight. They encourage each other. They tell each other stories. They pray for each other. It's just this real deep. I said, "Well, Dad, okay, so you can't meet at the restaurant that you always meet at, but could you go online? Could you do some like Zoom or some online platform to get together?" And he went, "Nah. We're just going to wait it out until everything goes back to normal. We're just going to wait until everything goes back to normal." I could relate to that sentiment. There's something inside us that gets very rigid when life happens. We're not flexible, we're rigid. I just want what we had back. Can we just give me that back? And oh, it's okay, I'll wait. But give me that back. This is what you call psychological inflexibility. I'm looking at Dad and going, "But Dad, We don't know what the normal is going to be. We don't know how long it might be before you ever get to do that again. Some of these guys are pretty old. I'm like, time's ticking. No. Locked down. Stephen Hayes, a renowned clinical psychologist, he calls this posture resisting. We resist change. I remember talking with a guy. He was a big planner. I remember a conversation I had with him when he was about 33. He had kind of mapped out his life. He said, by the time I'm 40, here's what I want to have achieved. He began talking about kind of net worth stuff. He started talking about travel plans. He talked about his family and things that he wanted to experience with his family. He had all these elaborate plans. He said, that's where I want to be by the time I'm 40. And then he said, and by the time I'm 50, he had it broke down to 50 and then 65. It's been interesting watching over the last number of years how when life began to conspire for him, got laid off, all of a sudden he's scrambling. Dollars aren't coming in. His plans chipping away. He digs down deeper, doubles down, starts doing a number of different jobs. It's like he's going to force this thing. He's going to make it happen. And then all of a sudden his marriage starts weakening. And he is just grabbing, white-knuckling life and saying, no, you will make this work. I got plans. I by the time I'm 40, this is going to happen. And it's like life just, he had to sell his house, but then he couldn't sell his house. And then when he didn't get the money for it. Then all of a sudden, his kid is acting up, going on the loose, demonstrating all kinds of risky behavior. He is just, his whole plan is just crumbling. And he is just digging in harder and harder and harder, resisting the way life seems to be pointing. We resist. That is normal. He says when we resist the flow of life, it's hard not to be miserable. Because we have so little control over the big variables of our life that are driving change. We can't control the markets or oil prices. We can't control the actions of others, our partners, our kids. We can't control the pandemic timeline. This lack of control can drive our minds, our psyches, crazy. It convinces us that life needs to go this way. It refuses to flex. Instead, this voice in our head starts protesting, pouting. It screams and it yells saying, no, this cannot happen. Or this is not fair. This is not going to be good. I hate this. This is resistance. Psychological rigidity. The first step to moving towards psychological flexibility, to the Joseph way of being, is being able to just notice the resistance inside. Notice your thoughts. You know, most of the time, we don't notice what we're thinking. Most of the time, we are just fully bought into whatever it is our minds are saying. You're standing in line. You've been in line for who knows how long, and you watch a guy come running from his car straight to the front of the line. And he's bobbing and weaving. He's talking. You can tell he's smiling at people right at the front of the line. And you're looking down. And you're thinking, what is that guy trying to pull? Back of the line, buddy! But no, he's weaseling his way in. What's your mind saying in this moment? Wait a second, someone better tell that guy to get back here. If you're not even careful, you get so twisted in your head, you walk out of line. You say, honey, hold my spot. And you walk right down to that guy and you say, buddy, the line starts back there, pal. That's what the line does. That's what the thoughts in your head does. When you've bought in, you say, do something, say something. Then the guy starts saying, I'm sorry, man. My family and my kids are inside. I was just in there. I left my wallet in the car. I just came running out to grab my cousin. Oh. I'm sorry, man. Hey, that's fine. You can, And in a second, you're walking back to the back of the line where your wife is, and you're thinking, oh my God, why did I get so upset? Yeah, that's what happens when we become so identified with that twisted voice in our head. That's why Stephen Hayes says, you got to notice your thinking. You got to get some distance from your thoughts. What are your thoughts doing right now? What are they saying? We have to see the part of us that's bothered. This is foundational to the entire spiritual journey. You want to do things this week, but there is some part inside of you that's saying, no, you can't do that. Or look at that, or freak out, whatever. And all of a sudden, you're behaving in a way that is not what you intended. But when we can see our thoughts for what they truly are, just our mind's ongoing attempts to make meaning of what's happening around us. And then, and that's really what they're doing. They're just trying to make meaning of what we're watching, what we're seeing. When you can see that and then only give them enough power so that they actually serve you. Oh. When we're able to engage in this act of noticing without giving in, without getting entangled in it all. This act of noticing is so powerful and is so important. Now, that's the first step. Question. What has been bothering the voice inside your head? What has you had you twisted up? Just want to do a very quick exercise here before I move on to the final thing. Here's how it works. You want to get distance from your thoughts. You want to be able to notice what's going on before you all of a sudden get so wound up by what's going on in your head. Here's what you do. I would invite you just to stand up. Just walk around the room. This is great anytime you get to a twist up. Just get up, walk around. And while you're walking around, I want you to do this. I want you to say these words. I can't walk around. I cannot walk around this room right now while you walk around. Just say that to yourself. I cannot walk around the room right now while you walk around. You can just say, now if you're on the bus somewhere or whatever, you're listening to this podcast and people around, you wouldn't do this in your head. But if you're at home right now, I want you to practice. Every time you're getting ready to do something and something is protesting, I want you to just, while you're walking around, while you're in this moment, I cannot go and engage with my family. I am so stressed out about everything that's going on with the business right now. While you're saying that, I want you to get up and go and sit with your family. I cannot stop eating this ice cream. While you take the ice cream and you go and put it in the sink, in the freezer. And this is just one of these little mind hacks that when you do it, you will shock yourself how you turn your attention on that tiny dictator inside your mind, and you say, no, shh, 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 shh. You don't have the power over me. You get distance. You push it out here, and you go, no, I can't do it. There's a lab experiment that was done on this very thing in Ireland. They took all these subjects, these people, who were willing to put their hand on a very hot surface, and they said, while you're putting your hand on that hot surface, I want you to be able to say this very thing. I can't keep my hand on a hot surface while you hold it there. The people that said that while they were doing that were able to hold their hand on that hot surface for 40% longer than everyone else This is a mind hack that shows your mind you are not powerful. I will not be dictated by you. You disobey on purpose. What is it that you're disturbed by today? What has been getting under your skin in that moment? Get up and start just telling yourself, no, I can't do this, while you do it. All right, first level. Second level, ninja. Once you've been able to notice your thinking, you will be able to jump up to this next level of psychological flexibility. And I'll tell you, it's not easy, but this is what it is. It's called radical acceptance. Radical acceptance simply means that you are acknowledging the reality that you're facing right now. You know, years later, after being sold into slavery and imprisoned, Joseph is not only released from prison, but he ends up working his way back up to the top. Within only minutes, he, like a short amount of time, he ends up being second in command over all of Egypt. And wouldn't you know, in that moment, who shows up but his brothers? The people that sold him into slavery years and years ago. There they are, begging his government for help. If there was ever a moment when Joseph had an opportunity to pay back, to punish, to make their lives miserable, this was it. Now, he did toy with them a little bit when they didn't recognize who he was. But in that moment, he began to forgive. He not only forgave them, he rescued them. He brought them in. He made arrangements for them to move from Israel into Egypt. He gave them a beautiful tract of land where they could settle. Something inside him was able to, like, literally acknowledge all that had happened and accept it. It happened. It happened. Now what? After all those years of suffering. Now, I'm pretty sure Joseph, he had never heard of the term psychological flexibility. But this story, this whole story in the Bible, and really in the Genesis, is all about psychological flexibility. It's all about him being able to hold his thoughts and his attitudes and his entitlements and his expectations in check. And then his ability to be able to find peace with all that's happened in his life, to be able to move on. Let me ask you something. How capable are you of accepting the things that have happened so far in your life? Even recently. That might be happening right now. You know, just to be clear, acceptance doesn't mean throwing your hands up in the air and saying, you know, whatever. It doesn't mean resignation. It doesn't mean, you know what, I'm not even going to try then, or I'm not even going to give a rip. No, it's not about that at all. Radical acceptance is actually the opposite of that. Once you are able to accept reality, it's then that you begin to consider how it is you might be able to change life going forward. Radical acceptance says, okay, this happened, or this is happening, or this is my reality. These changes to our industry are going to make it very difficult to make money now. That's the truth. This wage cut that I just experienced, honey, it means we're not going to be able to keep spending the way we've been spending. That's a fact. My child, according to what the doctor said today, has a learning disability. Our marriage is not in a good place. My mom doesn't have long to live. These are all just statements of fact. And when you can say them, you don't deny them, you don't resist them, you accept them. Then the question quickly becomes, okay, how are we going to handle this now? Practicing acceptance, radical acceptance, actually leads the way to the new normal. All right, what is the reality in your life right now? What is the unwanted change that perhaps you've been resisting? What is the thing you want to deny? What is the thing that's had you twisted up? What is the solution or the situation that has had you bothered? The kids not being in school? The job insecurity? The investment portfolio? The separation from your loved ones? This week, I invite you to just notice your thinking. Get some distance. Watch what's bothering you. Watch what it's saying. And watch what happens then as you're just able to acknowledge it. Go, whoa, you are not happy about that. Thank you. But if you want to take it up even a notch, you want to step up into ninja level, into Joseph department, I want you to just look at it and say, yep, this is the way it is. And practice just accepting what has happened, acknowledging it. May you rise above. We're finished the apocalypse series. We pray, our hope and our prayer has been that you have grabbed on to some of these tools to be able to live on another dimension in the middle of chaos. That your life is touching, it's infecting people with oozing with peace and joy. We hope that you'll take these tips and put them to work. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week for the start of our spiritual adulting series. See you soon.